Very nice. Adya Sanskritam Vaditam Shaknoti Kim. Blank. Can you now speak Sanskrit? Obviously not. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 6, Text 19. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Nahi achutang prinayato bhavyaya so suratma jaha atma. Atmatvat sarvabhutanam siddhatvat iha sarvataha. Translation. My dear sons of demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, is the original Supersoul, the father of all living entities. Consequently, there are no impediments to pleasing Him or worshipping Him under any conditions, whether one be a child or an old man. The relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a fact, and therefore there is no difficulty in pleasing the Lord. Purport. One may ask, one is certainly very attached to family life, but if one gives up family life to be attached to the service of the Lord, one must undergo the same endeavor and trouble. Therefore, what is the benefit of taking the trouble to engage in the service of the Lord? Sounds like a valid objection, doesn't it? If we say that material life is very troublesome, you may also say, well, serving Krishna is also troublesome. You have to get up early in the morning, you're restricted in your eating and sleeping, so many endeavors in preaching, or even if you just do puja at home, you have to, there's always some difficulty, you have to earn money to, or if one gives up family life and goes to the forest and worships the Lord, there may also be difficulties. So what's the object? What's the value? Anyway, I'll continue with Prabhupada's purport. This is not a valid objection. The Lord asserts in Bhagavad Gita. Now, what's the verse in Bhagavad Gita that might give some reply to this? Patrang pushpang palang toyam prapya punyakritam lokam. I don't really see how that fits. How about susukam kartam avyayam? That might fit. Anyway, the verse that Srila Prabhupada gives to develop the theme is sarva yonishu kaunteya murtaya sambhavanti yaha tasang brahma mahadyonirahang bija pradhapita. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. So what's that got to do with Krishna consciousness? Not being troublesome, or why should one take the trouble to engage in the service of the Lord? Keep tuned in. You need to keep your intelligence awake to follow all this. Srila Prabhupada states, the Supreme Lord Narayan is the seed-giving father of all living entities because the living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. Mamai vangsho ... jiva bhutaha. Presumably, The whole verse was meant to be given, but the transcriber left it at that. Let's ask about that. Which canto are? 7, 6, 19. As there is no difficulty in establishing the intimate relationship between a father and a son, there is no difficulty in re-establishing the natural intimate relationship between Narayana and the living entities. So that's the point. You follow that? That you may say it's troublesome to be in material life, okay, but it's troublesome to serve Krishna also. But then, in response to this, Srila Prabhupada points out, as Krishna himself points out in Bhagavad Gita, that all living entities are sons of Narayana. So there's no difficulty in re-establishing the relationship. That's the point. Then, Srila Prabhupada's purport in continuing that, Swapamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. If one performs even very slight devotional service, Narayana is always ready to save one from the greatest danger. The definite example is Ajamil. Ajamil separated himself from the Supreme Personality of Godhead by performing many sinful activities and was condemned by Yamaraj to be very severely punished. But because at the time of death he chanted the name of Narayana, although he was calling not for the Supreme Lord Narayana, but for his son named Narayana, he was saved from the hands of Yamaraj. Therefore, pleasing Narayana does not require as much endeavor as pleasing one's family, community, and nation. We have seen important political leaders killed for a slight discrepancy in their behavior. Most prominently, Mahatma Gandhi is a clear example. When I first came to India, that was the mid-1970s, Mahatma Gandhi was very much in the public consciousness. He's got lost in the meantime. Now, the present generation, they don't know about, care about, but he was a very big figure. And many, maybe even most people, had in their house a picture of Mahatma Gandhi. Was it? Many people had him on their altar. Many people said he was an avatar. He's very prominent in the consciousness. Now, forgotten to a large extent. Therefore, pleasing one's society, family, community, and nation is extremely difficult. Pleasing Narayana, however, is not at all difficult. It is very easy. Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of how Gandhi, he sacrificed everything for his country. He acted for the benefit of the people, but at least one of them wasn't happy with him and shot him dead. So that's an example how you may try so hard to please someone on the material platform, but ultimately you can't please everyone all of the time. Some people may be displeased with you, and then forgetting all the things that you did for the good, they become so upset that they kill you. Actually, this is just a historical aside. Srila Prabhupada often talked about Indian history, mostly not in classes, but I'll just give it as an aside. That Naturam Godse, who shot Mahatma Gandhi dead, more than a year between the time that he shot him dead and he himself was hanged. 18 months. Was it you who told me this? Sridharsham said that, yeah. And in the meantime, he wrote a whole big text about all the reasons why he did so, and showing how Gandhi actually was not, He did so many things which were not for the benefit of the country. Anyway, one's duty is to continue in the purport. One's duty is to revive one's relationship with Narayana. A slight endeavor in this direction will make the attempt successful, whereas one will never be successful in pleasing his so-called family, society, and nation, even if one endeavors to sacrifice his life. The simple endeavor involved in the devotional service of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord, can make one successful in pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore bestowed his blessings by saying, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. All glories to Sri Krishna Sankirtan. If one wants to derive the actual benefit from this human form, he must take to the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. There are many points in this verse and purport. One that I wish to develop particularly is that this point. It's actually the central point of the verse. There are no impediments to pleasing him or worshipping him under any conditions. In other words, bhakti is independent. Bhakti does not depend on one's age, birth status, education, even previous pious or impious activities, one's gender, even the species that one is in. Bhakti may manifest in the heart of any fortunate person in any time or place or circumstance. Bhakti may manifest. Bhakti is not dependent on any material condition. Now, this is a major point. Some time ago, there was some controversy going around in our society because one of our learned sannyasis said that, well, there's causeless mercy. There's no such thing as causeless mercy because you have to have the sukriti, bhakti and mukhi sukriti. One has to perform activities in relationship to bhakti, even not knowing, just like one may be in one life a dog and one eats some prasadam somehow or other. So that is, one gets some pious. It's not the same as mundane pious activities, but it's pious in the sense that it's not devotional service per se, but it is connected with Krishna, and it's not in an offensive way. So activities like that, one may be a dog or even a human at the Rathiatra of Lord Jagannath, some impression goes in the mind which remains even unconsciously in the mind, and when there's an accumulation. So this was the argument, that bhakti only arises in such a condition. That's generally true, but bhakti is not obliged to appear at any time. Even if one has heaps of pious activities which are in relationship to bhakti, even then bhakti is not obliged to manifest herself within the heart. And if one has no such pious activities, still bhakti can descend within the heart. So that's one important point I'm going to speak about. Another important point means when we say bhakti is not dependent on anything, that means bhakti is not dependent on karma, karma kanda activities, performing pious activities in the karma kanda section of the Vedas, under that, or according to that. Bhakti is not dependent upon jnana, upon trying to become free from this material world by cultivation of knowledge, even by cultivating knowledge of Krishna. Bhakti is not forced to come. And yoga, which is often considered a subdivision of jnana. So often it's said that karma, jnana, yoga and bhakti, these are the four paths delineated in Bhagavad Gita. And you can take to any of them. They're all the same, they're all as good as each other. But that is not at all the fact. Bhakti is superior to all of them in all respects. As will be discussed in this lecture, that it won't be finished in one day. And there's going to be a lot of reading and recitation of verses. So you have to keep tuned in, because when there's a lot of reading, often devotees don't seem to maintain the same kind of interest as when it's being explained. But it's a major important point, which we should understand very clearly. It is again and again stressed in Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Srila Prabhupada wrote about this in his purports. So let's start the discussion about this. Here when we're talking about bhakti, we're particularly talking about Shuddha Bhakti, which is the relationship of the jiva to Bhagavan is one of Shuddha Bhakti. When not Karma Mishra Bhakti or Jnana Mishra Bhakti or Yoga Mishra Bhakti, nor Bhakti Mishra Karma, no such thing. Pure devotional service, free from all personal desires, that is the very nature of the soul. And that's the way that the word bhakti is used mostly throughout Gita and Bhagavatam. It's a somewhat different usage to that which is common in Indian languages today. They don't know the definition, they don't know the proper meaning. So this pure devotional service to Krishna, Prahlad Maharaj explains here, it's not an exclusive practice only for a few people who have to be highly qualified, just like in Hindu culture, as in many cultures throughout the world. Now it's increasingly tending toward a monoculture of no culture. But there's a priestly class. People are born in a certain family, or a certain class, and generally the males of that class, in some cases the females, they can act as priests. So only they have the prerogative to do that. No one else is allowed to do it. Or it may be that certain people, there is such a class who are allowed to do certain rituals and roles and functions, but they have to take rigorous training before they can do so. Just like in the Catholic Church, Roman Catholic Church, any male who's a member of that church can become a priest, but they have to be, there are some conditions. They have to be celibate, which means in most cases they're not married. They could be also, not a divorcee can't become a priest, but someone whose wife has died can become a priest. and he has to practice celibacy, he has to take a lot of training, then only he can be a priest. So that's true in Krishna consciousness also. There are certain people who are as brahmanas who are allowed to worship the deities and so on, but everyone is open to perform bhakti. So it's not an exclusive practice. It's not meant for any, bhakti is not meant for any, just some particular class of people, not any particular nation. Only Indians can do bhakti. It's transcends any material consideration. It's not even that devotional acts necessarily result in bhakti. One can do shravan and kirtan, which are, that is bhakti. It's the means and the end, shravan and kirtan, hearing and chanting about Vishnu. But one, if one does that superficially, then bahu janma kare jodi shravan kirtan tabutanapai krishna pade premadan. One may go on doing it life after lifetime and not come to the platform of pure devotional service, which awards love of Krishna. On the other hand, there may be someone with no devotional background who's very sinful, and somehow means by the special mercy of the Lord or his devotee, can come to the platform of devotional service. Jagai and Madhai, in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were several in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually many it's described, but who simply by seeing the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or being benedicted by him, they were immediately promoted to the platform of devotional service, of pure devotional service. Understanding this point, that one, bhakti is a gift. We have to perform the activities of sadhana bhakti. And that helps us to awaken consciousness of Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates. He gives this process. He himself gives this process. And he reciprocates with the devotee who undertakes it. But the point is that he's not obliged to. He's only obliged when his pure devotee intercedes. Now, what to speak of if one is performing very pious activities? Performing sacrifices, that's connected with Vishnu. Because Vishnu is Yagyeshwara, he is the Lord of sacrifice. But if one is performing sacrifices for material purposes, that's a pious activity. Or one is persons who are wealthy and powerful, kings, they can undertake public welfare activities. Nowadays that's done by the government, state governments in this country, digging wells for public use, arranging water supply via irrigation. Actually, we don't hear a lot about irrigation in Vedic culture. Presumably, if there's enough rain, then there's not any need for irrigation. There used to be two monsoons over the whole of India. Now there's hardly even one, at least in this part. In Telangana, monsoonal rain is not enough. There's one monsoon in a year and the rain is insufficient. People are becoming less pious. Therefore these reactions are there. So they're pious activities. Serving brahmanas and sadhus, reciting from the Vedas, or for those who are not qualified to read the Vedas, they may recite from the Puranas. These are pious activities. The other day I saw Yukta Vairagya, in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. It's at that Ahobila Matam. It's a common thing. If you go to traditional temples, you'll see that the brahmanas, when in the break in between doing pujas or ceremonies, they'll sit at the side and they'll read a book and chant some Vedic mantras. But for the first time I saw one doing with, what do you call that, a tablet? What's that called? A tablet. So it's also Yukta Vairagya, they're also doing. No more book. Previously they'd do it just from memory. Then they did it from a book and now tablet. So these are all pious activities. And then there's jnana, when one gives up the thought of elevation to higher planets and undertakes activities for becoming free from material bondage. And yoga is another process aimed at the same goal. That's more physical process. But these processes, they cannot be compared to bhakti, which is the activity of the soul. The activities of karma kanda are an illusion. They may be pious in the sense that, well, they're not grossly sinful, and they do produce benefit for human society, makes life more tolerable in this material world. I mean, there is a difference between living in an ordered, civilized, cultured society and living in Syria today, which is just completely disordered and hellish. There is a difference. So pious activities, they make for the material welfare. And the idea is that by performing pious activities, one gets to enjoy this material world, but not in a grossly selfish way. Because the pious activities themselves, they make the person think about doing good for others. The pious activities prescribed in Shastra, they are supposed to inculcate a consciousness of doing good for others, selflessness, at least at the mundane level. A major problem comes when people think that this is religion, this is all there is, and that you can please God by just doing these activities. Service to man is service to God. And the Christian idea that just doing welfare activities, that is service to God. That's what He wants us to do. No transcendental idea whatsoever. Just performing social and physical welfare activities with no idea that the life in this material world is miserable, and however much you, even if the whole world agreed, everyone will cooperate to help everyone else, and which is not going to happen in this Kali Yuga for sure, unless they become Krishna conscious. But even if everyone cooperated to make life as nice as possible, there would still be janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukh. There would still be the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease. So karma and then jnana and yoga are based on the platform of understanding that this material world is completely miserable. Let me get out. So that's another kind of selfishness. So concerning this, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Bhukti mukti siddhi kami shu buddhi jodi hoy, garha bhakti joge tobe Krishna re bhajoy. If one is performing activities in karma for bhukti, material enjoyment, in jnana for mukti, or in yoga for siddhi, getting all kinds of spectacular abilities. But if such a person becomes actually of good intelligence, then he worships Krishna very intensely. And the verse quoted after that in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is Akama Sarava Kamo Va Moksha Kama Udaradhihi Ti Rena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purushang Param. One may have no material desires, be full of material desires, or desire liberation. But if he's actually of broad intelligence, then he should intensely, tivrena, in the Bengali is given gardha bhakti, very deep bhakti, or worship Krishna. But again, this should be understood that shuddha bhakti is not recommended. One may perform bhakti mixed with material desires, but that is not the perfection of life. One has to develop to that stage. So shuddha bhakti means anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kamadyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhakti rutama. Shuddha bhakti, pure devotee, pure devotion, in the beginning stage, even when one is not fully pure in consciousness yet, but it is the commitment to act only for the pleasure of Krishna, without any admixture of karma or jnana. Then in the perfectional stage, prior to the perfectional stage, we can, Savaipung Sangparo Dharmo Yato Bhakti Radhokshaje Ahaitukya Pratihata Yayatma Supracedati. The best dharma is that which leads to, which helps us to come to the stage of performing devotional service without any personal motive and always serving the transcendent Lord, understanding Him not to be simply an order supplier for giving fuel to the fire of our material desires, but who is to be worshipped simply because He is to be worshipped, because He is to be served, and we are to serve. So one does that without any personal motivation. One cultivates that sense. Here the word dharma is used in the sense of occupational duty. It's within the context of the discussion of how people should live in the varnashram system. What is the best dharma for all of them? The best dharma is that which leads to this consciousness of pure devotion. So the worldly dharma leads to the proper execution of worldly dharma, leads to the purest dharma of the soul, which is sarvopadivinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. That when one is beyond all material designations, even those connected with dharma, such as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi, when one is beyond all of these, Nahang Vipro, Nachanarapatiya, Navanasto, Yatirva, when one is beyond all these, and simply identifies himself as the servant of Krishna and engages in his service, engages all the senses in the service of the master of senses on the transcendental platform, that is pure devotion. Now, in this regard, that bhakti is open to everyone because it is the natural activity of everyone. There may be Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. People get different bodies according to their previous activities and previous dispositions. But the dharma, or the inherent nature of the soul, is to serve Krishna. And therefore, anyone can take that up at any time. It's not necessary to go through karma, jnana, and yoga. Anyone, in any condition, can take it up. Bhakti is independent of karma, jnana and yoga. So in this regard, there is in the second canto of Bhagavatam, one of Srila Prabhupada's longest purports in all of his books is to all those verses in that section, that Tatur Shloki Bhagavatam. He has very long purports. So I'm going to read an extract from one of those purports. But even the extract itself is several pages. So the verse in question is Etavad eva jignasyam tatva jignasunatmanaha anvyavyatireka bhyam yatsyat sarvatra sarvada. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. So again, the point that one should search after the Supreme Truth, go up to that standard in all circumstances, beyond space, beyond time, directly, indirectly. So that Absolute Truth is Krishna. So he should be approached in all times, places, circumstances, directly, indirectly. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes that the liberty of discharging loving transcendental service to the Lord is invested in everyone, even the women, the Shudras, the forest tribes, or any other living beings born in sinful conditions. And Prabhupada gives a reference, but doesn't give the verse at this point. I'll read the verse from the second canto. Tevai vidatyati taranti cha deva maya. I didn't read that correctly. Tevai vidatyati taranti cha deva mayam stri shudra huna shabara api papa jivaha yat. Yadbhuta krama parayana shila shikshas tiryag jana apikim ushuta dharanaye. The translation that Srila Prabhupada gives elsewhere in the second canto: surrendered souls, even from the groups leading sinful lives, such as women, the laborer class, and that means the Shudra, says Sri Shudra, Huna is given here as the mountaineers, and the Shabaras, or even the birds and beasts, can also know about the science of Godhead and become liberated from the clutches of the illusory energy by surrendering unto the pure devotees of the Lord and by following in their footsteps in devotional service. So this obviously reflects the well-known verse in Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna says, what is that verse? Kiratahunanda, that's elsewhere in the Bhagavatam. What's the first line? Mam hi paratavya pashritya yepi supapayonaya. Say similar word, it's very similar wording in this. Striyo vaishyas tatha shudras tepi yanti parangatim. Anyone who takes shelter in me, having just spoken apichet sudra acharo, even if one performs abominable activities, if one is bhajate mam ananya bhak, if one worships Krishna with fully sadhur eva samantavya samyag vyavasito hisaha, he should be considered saintly. Because kshipram bhavati dharmaatma sashvach chanti nigachati konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashti. Then mamhi partavya pasricha. Then after this mamhi partavya pasricha verse comes king punar brahmana punya bhakta rajarshayastata anityam asukam lokam imam prapya bhajasvamam. And what to speak? Kimuta, this is one of the common nyais in the Loki. What to speak of? Those who are in a better position, those who are brahmanas, saintly kings, my devotees, in that situation, who worship me in this miserable temporary world. In other words, it's expected, when we say bhakti is independent, it's not completely haphazard. It's generally expected that people from a better background have a better chance. As we often preach that in India, that, well, if the Westerners who are so far away, culturally far away from Krishna consciousness, can take to it seriously, then why not the Indians? So it's not completely haphazard. It is expected that people of a better background will take to Krishna consciousness and can perfect it more easily because they have that better background. That you started to quote that? Oh no, that was, no. I thought, there's that, Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe, Prapya Punya Kritam Lokan Ushitva Shashvatis. Someone who's had a good background, but they didn't complete their perfection in one life, they get a better chance in the next life. So, the point is that bhakti can manifest anywhere. It's not expected that such a high-class religious system will manifest in people of the low class, because low class means papa yoni, sinful birth. Then again we get the Ahobhatasvapachatogariyan yajjivagribhartate namatubhyam tepas tapas te juhuvu sasnararya brahmanucha namagrinanti yate, that it's most wonderful that even people who are born in families of dog eaters, they can chant the holy name of Krishna constantly. And by doing so, it's understood that they've already surpassed all the pious activities, such as bathing in holy places, performing vows, and so on. So, it's not that even one has to go through all that stages. If somehow or other someone from any level takes to Krishna consciousness, then they don't have to go through karma, jnana, yoga, all these things. They automatically surpass all of them by coming to the proper position. This is the essence. You're also, there are so many verses which uphold this. Kirata hunandra, there you go, andra, kira. Oh, now you're in Telangana. Pulinda Pulkasha. Then what's the next line? Abhira. I was saying Abhira. It's not, Abhira is not Andhra. Abhira is something else. Shumbha Yavana Kasa Daya. Then next line. Ye ne chapapa yadapa shraya shraya shudhanti tasmai prabha vishnave namaha. So the point here is that Vishnu is so powerful that even not directly, even by his devotees' intercession, the most fallen people can become purified to the highest level. That's an instance, that's how powerful he is. That he can invest his power in someone else and they can do something seemingly impossible to lift such people up to the highest level. So, getting back to Srila Prabhupada's purports, to the Etavad Eva Jignyasam, which it's a long extract. So, Srila Prabhupada writes, the lowest of human beings can be elevated to the highest stage of devotional life if there is some condition. If they are trained by the bona fide spiritual master, well versed in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So training is required. Even in the case of Ajamil, he was very fallen. He was saved by chanting the name of Narayana. But it wasn't that he immediately went back to Godhead at that point. He went for more training. So training is required. If the lowest can be so elevated, then what to speak of the highest who are well versed in the Vedic knowledge? I just made that point. The conclusion is that devotional service to the Lord is open for all, regardless of who they are. That is the confirmation of its application for all kinds of performers of the service. So it's open to all, but generally it's expected that the highest class of people will take to that. Again, that hobilam matam, which is mostly high class people, isn't it? And lower class, the by Mahatma Gandhi's movement, the Harijans were allowed to enter, the so-called Harijan. The real Harijans, they were already entering the temple, but the lowest class of people. But they don't even want to, actually. Even they got the opportunity, they'd rather go to the temple where there's animal killing and this and that. Nowadays, they don't even have temples, right? They used to have temples for animal killing. They went to their own temples. But they don't. Nowadays there's chicken shops on every corner, so what do they need a temple for killing animals for? But they would... Anyway, Srila Prabhupada's purport continuing. Therefore, the devotional service of the Lord with perfect knowledge through the training of a bona fide spiritual master is advised for everyone. It's great. Give them Prabhupada's books and everyone will get the right idea what to do if they read. It's very straightforward. The devotional service of the Lord with perfect knowledge through the training of a bona fide spiritual master is advice for everyone. If people just take that up, then their life is well on the way to perfection. Even if one happens not to be a human being, train the animals in devotional service. That's a tough one. Some people can do it. Well, you can train animals to perform various... Some animals can be trained to do some functions and they can be engaged in devotional service. Different kinds of dogs are trained in different ways. Guide dogs for blind people. Then dogs for herding up the cattle and the sheep. Guard dogs. This is confirmed in the Garuda Purana as follows. Kita pakshimriganam cha harau sanyasta chetasam urdhvang eva gating manye king punar gyaninang nirnam. Even the worms, birds and beasts are assured of elevation to the highest perfection of life if they are completely surrendered to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So what to speak of the philosophers amongst the human beings. Again, it's possible even for the lowest. So what to speak of the highest? They have a better chance. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to deliver all the living beings in the universe, not even only the human beings. He inquired from Haridas Thakur, so now we're chanting and the human beings are elevated. But what about all the birds and the beasts? What about them? And Haridas Thakur famously replied, "Pashu paki." He said they can't cheat. They can't chant. So what will they do? Then Haridas Thakur's reply, "Pashu paki kitadi bolite na par shunile harinam tara otare." By hearing the holy name, they can be uplifted. So we can go everywhere and chant, and living beings in the bodies of pashu, pakshi, kit adi, they can all be uplifted. Animals, birds, worms. Continuing Srila Prabhupada's purport. Therefore, there is no need to seek properly qualified candidates for discharging devotional service to the Lord. Let them be either well-behaved or ill-trained. Let them be either learned or fools. Let them be either grossly attached or in the renounced order of life. Let them be liberated souls or desirous of salvation. Let them be inexpert in the discharge of devotional service or expert in the same. All of them can be elevated to the supreme position by discharging devotional service under the proper guidance. There's a challenge for preachers. Because some people, they can be brought to devotional service more easily. We can say, generally speaking. But there is no constitutional bar to anyone taking to devotional service. So we should open our preaching center. Is that Charminar? That's a Muslim area, is it? So that's a great challenge. Gauriamat is there. Madhav Maharaj's mat. They do Rath Yatra there. No problem. Huh? Yeah. Generally speaking, most of the Muslims I see, many of them appreciate our Krishna conscious movement. In general, they're more religious than Hindus are. Definitely. So they appreciate that we're also serious about what we're doing. Yeah, and we don't have any political overtones. We're religious for the sake of being religious. They don't understand spiritual, but religious they can understand. And we have some rules. They appreciate that also. But making them devotees could be tough. Not impossible. Can be done. Should be done. So, Srila Prabhupada's purport continuing. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 30 and 32, as follows. I already quoted those verses. I'll say them again. Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadhur eva samantavya samyag vyavasito hi saha mang hi partavya pashritya yepi syuf papayo neyaha striyo vaishyas tata shudras tepi yanti param gatim. Even if a person is fully addicted to all sorts of sinful acts, if he happens to be engaged in the loving transcendental service of the Lord under proper guidance, he is to be considered the most perfect holy man without a doubt. And thus, any person whatsoever and whosoever he or she may be, even the fallen woman, the less intelligent laborer, the dull mercantile man, or even a man lower than all of these can attain the highest perfection of life by going back home, back to Godhead, provided he or she takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in all earnestness. This sincere earnestness is the only qualification that can lead one to the highest perfectional stage of life. Tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam. Strong desire to attain devotional service is the qualification by which one may get it. And then, of course, even then, Krishna, we may say, he's not obliged, but actually he does become obliged. He himself feels obliged, because he's a person. And if someone may perform all the... He may go to Mangalati every day, chant rounds, follow all the rules, which should be done. I'm not saying they shouldn't be done. But if one does it in a mechanical kind of way, that won't move Krishna as much as someone is calling out, like Draupadi famously called out, Govinda, 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 when her cloth is being torn away. That calling out with no other shelter, Ananya Sharanam, no other shelter but Krishna, then Krishna feels obliged because he is a person and he is the very best person. So he's not going to ignore someone who's calling out for his help and his shelter. So there is no condition, there's no formula. The only formula is to have the feeling for Krishna. And of course, all the rules and regulations, they're meant to help us develop such feelings because it's natural for the soul to do so. So if we go on hearing and chanting about Krishna, then naturally we should awaken such feelings. So, Srila Prabhupada continuing his purport, unless and until such real earnestness is aroused, there is a difference between cleanliness or uncleanliness, learning or non-learning in the material estimation. So as long as one, until one is not fully eager to serve Krishna, then one should continue to follow rules of purity, cleanliness, uncleanliness, rules, regulations, even all these things. And even if one is very earnest in serving Krishna, one should do so at least to give an example for others who need to follow these rules so they can be elevated to the platform of earnestness. And also, if one is worshipping the deity, one has to follow rules of cleanliness, even one is a pure devotee, and so on. So, continuing Prabhupada's purport, fire is always fire, and thus if someone touches the fire, knowingly or unknowingly, the fire will act in its own way without discrimination. So, if one takes to devotional service, because it's imbued with the presence of Krishna, that will have its effect, just like fire acts. You may not understand how it acts, but if you put your hand in it, you're going to feel the heat. So if someone is in a spiritual atmosphere of devotees who are actually hearing and chanting with enthusiasm, determination, and patience, following all the rules, utsaha nischa dharya tatat kamaparatanat sangatyaga sato vrite shadbhya bhakti prasidhyati, who are actually manifesting all these favorable qualities in devotional service, then one is going to be affected and one will be purified. And one, what will happen? Continuing Prabhupada's purport, the principle is Harir Harati Papani Dushta Chitair Api Smritaha. The all powerful Lord can purify the devotee of all sinful reactions just as the sun can sterilize all sorts of infections by its powerful rays. So there's no material condition for taking the devotional service, but bhakti manifests herself in the world through devotees and by association with devotees, then one will also become infused with devotion. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there for now, and Krishna willing, tomorrow we can resume this. There's a lot to go through. Hare Krishna. Well, you have a question. It will probably be answered or discussed in the upcoming. There's a lot of stuff to go through. What's the question?
Yeah. But there is also that verse about our covered boys, Krita Punya Punjaha.
Yeah. All right. That's all to be discussed. Actually, I was thinking whether to discuss that Krita Punya Punjaha, but I thought not to, but okay, you brought it up. When I come to the Jamma Koti Sukrita in the Labhyate, I'll bring that up. All in due course. Yeah, then?
If bhakti is independent, we also see that in the Bhagavatam, it is Bhaktya Shruti Grahitaya and Shruti Smriti Purana, the Pancharatri Kavidin Dina.
Yeah.
So it is like based on philosophical.
Yeah. But that has been touched upon even in today's class and will be discussed more, that even bhakti in this world is to be performed. Yeah, it'll be discussed more in later. Bhakti in this, it doesn't mean that we should just give up all rules and regulations, but the point we should understand is that it's not, or studies, but we should understand that it's not simply by our following all these things, it's not by our own endeavor that bhakti is forced to appear. I chanted 3 times 64 rounds for the last 50 years. I only ate one handful of rice every day for the last 60 years. I lived in Vrindavan. So I must be going back to Godhead. Actually, living in Vrindavan should do it for you. All of these things should do it for you. But ultimately, it's up to Bhagavan himself. We can't force our way in. That's the point. One has to actually develop the humble, submissive mood and, like the chatak bird, wait for the mercy to come. You can't force it to come. That point should be understood. Otherwise, without understanding that, one can go on in devotional service and never actually get the result. If we think that I am doing this and as a result, we have confidence that Krishna will deliver us, but not on demand. Surely Krishna is very merciful. Even though I am totally unqualified still, I've come to the shelter of my spiritual master and I'm trying. So surely Krishna will take notice of that, and it may take crores of lifetimes. But surely Krishna will be cognizant of that. So that's the attitude. Not that, yeah, I did so much, and the cobbler and the brahmana, that story comes to mind. Brahmana thought, well, I must be going back to Vaikuntha. I deserve it. One who thinks like that is barred from going.
Then
that point comes up. Then why do we go to the colleges to preach? Intelligent students, they can take it up. There's no bar to anyone else to take it up. Srila Prabhupada said that we should preach in the colleges so people with intelligence, they can become leaders. But it doesn't mean that those who are not leaders, they're any less in devotion. It's a practical consideration. It may be a disadvantage also to have all that college studies in your head. They may take to devotional service being frustrated with their college life, so that becomes some kind of impetus for them. Or they may have some pious background by which they can understand this. But yeah, it's expected that, again, it's the same point's already made, it's already expected that some people are more likely to take to devotional service, but no one is barred. At the Hobila Matam, it's expected that people from Vaishnava families will go there, but no one's barred. Anyone can go. Hare Krishna.